This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport, powered by fans.
Hi, and welcome to Back of the Nest Preview Show. I'm your host, Chris Hambling, and in this episode, we look back at the 3-1 defeat at Everton and tackle a host of your questions as Palace continue to drop down the table. I'll introduce you to my panel right after this short message.
Fintons.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Right, with me today I have Nicholas Gillard.
How you doing? All right?
Yeah, you're back, aren't you?
Yeah, quite regular now.
Yeah. Sure how I feel about this, but you know, hey, thanks for joining me today.
That's my pleasure.
Excellent stuff. We also have Mr. Mike Scott, if the recording is actually working, because you've had some troubles, haven't you, Mike?
I have, but hello all, that should be good.
Yeah. Well, you actually went to Everton, and you went with Chris Clark of this parish, and he's had a time of it, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's not back yet. Obviously, we've had Storm, whatever. What's the storm called? Storm Hazel or
Fiora.
Whatever it is. Okay. So he's stuck up there, but he's been there since Friday anyway. Got some excellent stories on his weekend. Fairly eventful, fairly amusing. So I'm happy to share them if you'd like me to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, why not? We haven't got a lot of fun things to talk about, have we? So.
Boy, it's true. Okay, well. I got there. I went nice and early Saturday morning. 12:30 away kickoffs are the devil's work, and I hate them. But he went Friday evening. Got the slow train up so he could do some work, and he met a couple of mates. And in typical Chris style, I think he had a bit too much to drink. And I think it says a lot about the man that I wasn't surprised when he said he was sick. He said he got up the lift to go to his room, his hotel room. He got out of the lift and realised he didn't think he'd be able to make it to his room without being sick. He was sick not once, not twice, but 3 times down the wall in the corridor. Apparently, they didn't manage to find out it was him. But the next day, there was
they do now.
The next day, there was these kind of stains on the wall and the carpet where they cleaned it up, and just a guy walking with his arm over his face. But that's not the best bit. He turned up to the pub. I was in, he told me to meet him in the Ship and Mitre, which was a really lovely pub. Went in there with Paul from the Homesdale Cravatics and a few other people. Very nice. So Chris turned up a little bit late, typical, probably stayed in bed a bit too long, in just a t-shirt. And it wasn't very warm in Liverpool. The reason he was just in a t-shirt is he'd been sick on his only jacket and his only jumper. So the entire of yesterday, he was in nothing but a black t-shirt.
First of all, when you said in just a t-shirt, I immediately pictured him as Teddy Ruxpin.
He was wearing trousers. He wasn't Teddy Ruxpin yet, no.
Good, because that isn't acceptable, even in Everton away, sorry.
Brilliant stuff. Well, I mean, that's classic Clarkey. He just cannot help himself, can he? But you coped all right, you know, lots of train biz. You know, so, you know, you're starting that early. It's risky.
Yeah, I mean, I only had them on the way up. On the way back, I'd had enough by that point. So just had a bit of a snooze. It was fairly civilised. Had enough to take the edge off the game, really. That was the main thing.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, this, even though that was quite savage, what happened to Chris, it doesn't quite match the savagery that was the preview show this week, does it? Let's face it. You know.
I can't go into any coffee shops anymore without guffawing when I look down the menu and see cappuccino, because that ruined it for me for the rest of my life now. It really has.
No spoilers if you haven't heard it, but even though it's a preview of the Everton game, if you haven't listened to it, and I don't know why you wouldn't have done, but please go and give that a listen. It was incredible work from the boys this week. And lots of messages from people in hysterics in trains and on their commute to work and all that sort of stuff. It was excellent. Yeah, cappuccino. Anyway, let's get on with this. So we've got some great news for us in terms of the show, not so much in terms of Palace at the moment, but we've teamed up with Pitch Sport Football. They've got an app which I very much encourage you to download. Probably the easiest way to do that, if you Google Pitch Sport Football, it's the first thing there, available on the App Store and Google Play. Quite a simple app at the moment, but it's essentially around predicting results, talking about lineups, and just generally getting in conversation with ourselves and also John Solarco, who's on there as well, posting videos on a regular basis. They do a podcast themselves from a general football sense. You know, we're just getting to know them early in the relationship, but it's something that's quite entertaining. We're all on there. You can add us as friends and we'll put our codes out another time. But like I say, get yourself signed up, get in touch and start interacting. It's well worth doing. And I look forward to a long and prosperous relationship with Pitch Sport Football. This week and every week, DR is popping up a fan time question of the week. This week he did it under the name of Michael for some reason. But he asked basically a question around who can replace Roy. It's something obviously we'll probably be talking about during the show today. But if you join up with the app, you can reply to DR/Michael with your own answers. And we look forward to that interaction growing. If you want to get in touch with us after a game or indeed at any point, via WhatsApp, you can leave us a voice message, 0203 575 1266. Pop that in your contacts and then use WhatsApp to send a voice message. Our socials, Instagram is at Back of the Nest CPFC, Twitter at Back of the Nest, Facebook, Back of the Nest, YouTube, Back of the Nest, and email hi@backofthenest.com. And finally, lots of you have been doing this, really appreciated. 5-star reviews on your chosen podcast app. They go a long way to helping us spread the word of the show, and it's hugely appreciated.
And thank you, especially this week, for the people that blocked us on Twitter or told us we were horrible human beings. Excellent. Cheers to you all. Appreciate it.
Was there many? Who was that? Was that Andy P. Burton again?
He was certainly one of them. Yeah, there's 3 or 4. That's good. It's good. It shows people listening if they block you or tell you you're a total bastard. So that's good.
Why are we bad people? What do we do? I remember one of them was that apparently we had an agenda. Not sure what that agenda would be. A whole host of people who don't tend to agree with each other apparently have a collective agenda. Anyway, I don't let that kind of stuff bother me in the slightest. So we'll crack on with the show and let's talk. We usually leave the game till the sort of after a main topic, but the main topic this week, I think, will be a Q&A, which so we've decided we'll do that after the game. The game discussion, and we can't really start anywhere else other than the fact that Roy named the same lineup against as we played Sheffield United at home away to Everton. I wasn't surprised. I doubt either Nick or Mike or any Palace fan really was surprised, but probably the most important group that weren't surprised were Everton. And you know, it's getting really, really hard to take now. We're seeing a club that isn't really feeling like it's going in the right direction at the moment, and we're seeing a manager who, even when he's been given the chance to make changes, he hasn't done so. You know, the injuries have subsided to a point. Lots of excuses were being made about, you know, he's picking the only 11 he could, but we're seeing that level of consistency from Hodgson that you know, at times has served us well. You know, for me, it really feels like it's costing us at the moment. And I have to sort of point to some stats that were put up on Sky Sports today, where you think about, you know, why, you know, people go, oh, Roy's doing great with what he's got. And, you know, why are people moaning and wanting a change? Well, you know, listen to this. In terms of goals scored, 20th in the Premier League. In terms of shots, 20th in the Premier League. In terms of shots on target, equal 19th in the Premier League. In terms of chances created, because we often hear how we're creating chances and we just need to put them away, 20th in the Premier League. In terms of crosses into the box, 18th in the Premier League. The only thing we're doing well at in that list is goals conceded, where we're equal 6th. Our defence and our goalkeeper has got us out of jail so much, and it's never more evident when you look at those statistics.
Who are the two clubs below us for crosses? That's incredible. I can't believe that. There was a good half a dozen of us in the pub, and there was definitely some dissenting voices going, oh, let's stay in the pub. It got to 11:30 and people saw the lineup. Oh God, no Andros. They're serving some nice beers in here. Why don't we stay? Is it a bit of a shame? I mean, I can see why people say there's not a lot he can do, but I was personally gutted to not see Andros because I think you talked about the stats from Sheffield United last week where, you know, only 23% of the chances came down the right-hand side, and that really is a bit of a weak spot at the moment.
I really feel for you going up there completely and utterly. Was it really bad in the stands there? Or, you know, was it just hand-wringing or was it people shaking their heads? How was it? No, it seemed quite quiet.
No, I mean, it was very quiet. It was Library-esque. Everton fans are very quiet. Even when they went 1-0 up, there was a bit of shouting for a minute and then back to silence. The HF, I think, were fairly dispersed. If there were that many, I recognised a few, but I don't think they all could travel up. And there certainly wasn't one particular place where, you know, songs were coming from. People were trying their best. There was about 8 people in the middle of the middle of the middle block trying to get things going, but it wasn't easy. I think we were in decent voice compared with the Everton fans, but it was a quiet one. As 12:30 games just tend to be, really, don't they?
Yeah, of course they do. And, you know, again, you know, as much as we've always looked at ourselves as a club that doesn't need what's going on the pitch to inspire us to make noise, I think at the moment it's really difficult for anyone to really find any huge amount of excitement with what we're having to watch at the moment. You know, I noticed a very significant sea change on social media in terms of how critical people were being. Lots of people now saying, oh, look, you know, up until today I was fully behind Roy, but now I'm in the Roy out camp, or at least heading that way. You know, it's not something I like to read, because, you know, my natural inclination, as much as I've been critical of Roy for quite a long time now, my natural inclination is to back anyone in a Palace shirt and any Palace manager, because I think being supportive is the way to go. It's kind of our duty as fans to get out there and support the team and try and create a positive atmosphere. But I think when you start listing the things that have gone on of late that really make it hard to do that, I think, you know, we're human beings and basically, we're struggling. And Nick, I know you were talking before the show about how it was a bit of a watershed for you.
It was a watershed for me. But just before you go on to that, social media, a lot of people are saying, oh, I'm not renewing my season ticket, or, oh, I'm going to change my team. I'm presuming they're Americans. I'm hoping it's American people. But you can't give up your season ticket. This is part of the Palace ride. You know, we've had some good times. Look, I've sat through Peter Taylor. You can sit through this. You ain't giving up your season ticket. And if you can't sit through the bad times at Palace, you don't appreciate the good times as much. But yeah, after the game yesterday, I was fuming. I thought, why is he picking the same lineup? We know what's going to happen. Gyro and PVA can play in the same team. I'm convinced of it. We just need something different. You can't keep repeating the same thing, because A, other teams know what we're doing. B, we look stale. It looks stagnant, and there's a general malaise, and it's getting to social media, which is obviously exacerbated a bit. But tweeting Steve Parrish, do you think he's going to take any notice? You know,
no, not if you tweet him. No, and the level of abuse is just idiotic, to be honest with you. But you know, people have to have an outlet for their frustrations, and I'm, you know, that's probably the easiest outlet, to be fair.
Better on Twitter than somewhere else, I suppose.
I don't want to piss all over your show notes because I know you've written a fair amount on the game. But what I would say from being up there is if people lost it after yesterday, I find that a little strange because the game was it seemed to me like quite an outlier for our season because we did create plenty and Benteke obviously scored one but probably should have scored at least two. But what was different from the majority of the other games this season is we're kind of back to, like you say, we're sixth for conceding goals in the league, which is, you know, decent. We defended uncharacteristically badly, but at the same time created an uncharacteristically large amount. So yesterday's game didn't seem like the continuation of say the Sheffield United game, because there was points when when they came in and smashed in the second, it looked as though we were the ones looking like we were going to go 2-1 up. So yeah, it was a bit odd and I just don't think it was quite similar to the other games recently.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And the key thing is, if we were talking about this game on its own, it really is fair to say that we played quite well at times. I don't go along with the idea, you know, Roy talked after the game, frustrated me to watch him speak, really, because he was talking about being dominant and playing really well. And I think that's a stretch. But I do think it was a better performance than perhaps the anger suggests. But the reason that is pretty obvious to everybody. The anger's there because we've had a terrible transfer window. We've won 3 games in 18 now. We are perilously close to the bottom of the table when everyone was much more confident, you know, even a matter of 3-4 weeks ago. You know, we're rightfully getting anxious. We're rightfully getting frustrated. And the worst thing is we know what to expect every time we turn up. And when you're in such a terrible run of form, you want to see something. You want to see some kind of creative thinking, something that little bit different. You know, and Roy, again, in his words after the game, you know what he's thinking. He's thinking, if we keep doing the same, if we keep plugging away, it will turn for us. He might be right, but, you know, I think half a season we're talking about now, half a season in terrible, terrible form. And yes, we've had injuries and it's been difficult at times, but you can't write off half a season as, oh, you know, if we keep going like this, we'll be fine. And you certainly can't look at the season-long stats that we talked about earlier and think that there isn't a significant problem to solve, because there really is.
What stuck in my craw is that Ward didn't have a very good game and there's no competition for that place at the moment. So he can afford to not have a very good game because he's got, you know, nobody pushing him. And that is not down to Roy, or maybe it is, but we can go over the getting the right back in. But, you know, the blame is not solely with the manager. We've got to make that clear. Maybe we were unlucky. And Mike, yeah, we were unlucky in that game. Fine margins, you know, can make or break a game and make or break a manager. PVA not, you know, it hit the post if it had gone in. But, you know, it's that kind of thing. We've got Tosin back the next game. But if we set out the same, I think Newcastle is going to be the litmus test. It really is, because if we put in another poor performance at home, particularly with Steve Bruce, I want him looking at his shoes. But like you've said before, it might be that we'll win that one and then everybody will be all right. And because you know how fickle we are, we'll win a couple of games and then we'll lose 4 or 5. It's, you know, do we do enough just to stay up and hope for the investment? Who knows?
That's some good points. I think the only thing before we get into the goals is to say that the defending was Pardew-esque. I mean, that was the reason. We were lucky, very lucky, not to have conceded 4, perhaps even 5. That Calvert-Lewin miss at the end. It was just odd. There was that defending was just terrible. I suppose we'll go into them now.
Yeah, we will. And I think, you know, a couple of things I haven't really written down that I was expecting us to talk about anyway. You talk about the defending. I thought it was Gary Cahill's worst game in a Palace shirt by some distance. He looked off the pace before we even conceded, before he even made any actual errors. It was really noticeable that he was dealing with his defensive duties, purely sort of pushing and holding people. And, you know, he just seemed like he was struggling to keep up with things. And I don't know why that was. I don't know if he's carrying an injury or something, because he's been, you know, excellent, as has Tompkins, you know, when they've played. But, you know, in this particular game, we'll talk. I mean, the first goal really highlights it, actually. You know, so we've Wolf's been tackled
you know, as we're trying to break down the left-hand side, down Everton's right. But, you know, for fully 20 seconds, I was watching it again earlier back, as I'm a glutton for punishment, there were seven Palace players attracted to five Everton players on the right-hand side of the pitch. So before the ball even comes in, you can look across to the box, and Joel Ward is standing there in the middle. He's the only player, only Palace player in the middle of the box, marking the centre forward. So already you've got a right back marking the centre forward. And Bernard, who eventually scores the goal, is just standing on the edge of the box. Nobody around him, because the whole midfield has been sucked out to the side of the pitch. And he's just got the freedom to stroll over to the right-hand side of the box. No one picks him up. Ward can't go anywhere. He can't leave Calvert-Lewin. And that's absolutely critical, because as PVA dives in on Walcott and misses the ball, Walcott gets free, puts the cross in. And you can just see it as they realise Walcott's about to cross. You can see several players frantically trying to move across and get into the middle. But just way too late. It's pathetic. And Ward, you know, he's got to stay with Calvert-Lewin. He can't do anything else, but misses Calvert-Lewin and ends up effectively not really marking him, and certainly not marking Bernardo on that side. And it's a good finish. You know, it's hard and pass Guaita before he can react. And we know he's got great reactions, but, you know, you defend like that, you deserve to go 1-0 down.
It did look to me as though they were expecting Ayew to pick up Bernard, who, by the way, instantly got under my skin. It all 4'8" of him, he was being a bit of a twat. It was very annoying that he volleyed that goal in. But the amount of space he was in, it did look as though they were expecting Ayew to be tracking back, which he didn't do, which, you know, you probably would expect Andros to have done, because he was a pivotal cog in the defensive machine before he got injured.
Yeah, absolutely right. But ultimately, you know, it's an incredibly disappointing goal. It just looked so easy. And it's very easy to look at the players in the immediate vicinity. And you talk, you know, especially Ayew, perhaps not tracking back. But there weren't huge numbers of Everton players forward. I think, you know, our midfielders killed us there. And potentially you need to look at the reasons for that. You know, why are we so compact in that area of the pitch? Because we know Roy is very keen to organise the midfield and keen to organise where people are when we're, you know, when we don't have possession of the ball. So have the players made that mistake, or is it simply a case of Everton exploiting our tactics?
To be fair, the Everton guy who we spoke to on Love Sport on Wednesday said that their midfield had been terrible. So whether Roy wanted to kind of get onto that, I don't know. But it's just the same thing over and over again, Chris. I've had enough of it, mate. How do you actually get this manager to change his ways? Because it is getting really, really concerning. The more you're talking about it, I know I've had enough. I've really had enough.
I can sense that. I think the point you made earlier is it's not all about the manager. There's things that, you know, Roy can't stop the lack of quality. Because I think I tweeted this at half time. I was really trying to avoid sticking the boot in on Roy or anything like that during the game. And just to try and make comments that weren't the same comments I've been making all season while I was tweeting. And I said the most disappointing thing for me was the lack of quality that we had. You know, Luka must have smashed the ball on a diagonal out of play 3 or 4 times. And you can't really legislate for that. Roy's not asking him to do that. So that's where the players need to take the responsibility as well, because they were not, you know, performing. They weren't. Roy talked about it again post-match, talked about our passing improved in quality towards the sort of end of the first half, but it couldn't have got much worse. We were so wasteful, and we are so weak when teams press us that, yeah, it's embarrassing at times. It really is. And the players are better than that. And I suppose you have to ask the question why they don't have that belief. And perhaps then, Nick, I guess that might go back to the manager.
Yeah, we don't seem to be playing with any flair. Now, Maya's meant to be a flair player, perhaps a bit of a luxury player. Ayew goes on terrific runs, you know, ball sticks to his feet. I've thought he had quite a decent game yesterday. You know, I'd like to see his heat map. But, yeah, we just, no imagination. And is it the rigidity? Has it been beaten out of them? I think if we keep playing like it, it's just it's just going to get a lot worse. And that's going to really, really get the players' confidence. And you don't want it to be a downward spiral.
I think we see...
You really don't. And that's the danger of it happening.
I think we really do see evidence of what, when we're watching Palace, of our approach being more about trying to stop our opponents, trying, you know, being concerned about what our opponents might do. You know, Roy talked before the game about, you know, our front three are capable of scoring goals, they're capable of giving anyone a game. I think, first of all, sometimes the choice of words that Roy uses give a bit away. Because he's talking about attacking as all being about the front three. So straight away, you're talking about three players versus their defence. Because he's in his head, you know, the back five, including the keeper, plus his three central midfielders, they're all about stopping the opposition, defending, keeping shape. And that shows you really, I think, where our biggest problems come from. So there is that. But, you know, I think we can't really... I don't know, we can't really get too sort of worked up about... Sorry, Nick, you've just jumped in there. I'm going to let you come in.
No, I was going to say, could Gyro actually fit that role just in front of the defence? I mean, Luca's so close to being banned again, isn't he? Because he's one yellow card away. It was a surprise he didn't get one yesterday. But, you know, what would be a different way to play? And I don't want you to go all kind of De Boer on us, but, you know, what differently could we do with that group of players that Roy isn't doing?
Well, there's load. I mean, I got a load of stick for posting my Pitch Sport football team. I got loads of people because I took McCarthy and MacArthur out of it. I changed to a 4-2-3-1. I had Luca and Coyote screening, Meyer ahead of them, and then Townsend, Zaha, and Ayew. That was my idea of doing something different. And loads of people said, you can't drop MacArthur. He's our best midfielder, or, you know, Meyer's too weak to play that position and all this kind of stuff. And my point back was just, that's different though, isn't it? It's something different. You're not relying on three people screening. To talk about Riedewald coming in, you're absolutely right. He could probably do that job. And the interesting thing, if you think about maybe, you know, if Sakho was fit and playing in the centre-back position, you know, those two players really can pass the ball and generally speaking are calm on it as well. Sometimes Sakho's a little too calm on the ball. But adding that level of technical ability into the squad could probably help with the way that we're actually playing. So I really see it as a case of, if we're going to keep picking this team, we've got to play differently. We can't keep trying to knock the ball around, you know, with short passing and build attacks when we've got people who aren't confident enough on the ball and aren't technically good enough to make consistent passes.
I think they're really, really rigid in the training. Somebody, I think it was West Brom, an ex-West Brom player, said the training was really, really dull with Roy because it was the same thing over and over and over again. So that they're not used to different situations, if that's the case. My Pitch Sport team was exactly the same as yesterday's, except I had Ayew up front, dropping Benteke and Townsend, playing where Ayew played.
Anyway, look, let's move on. After we'd conceded a goal, there was something of a shout for a penalty on Wilf. So he's challenged Pickford. Pickford's not quite got his hands fully on the ball, and Wilf's kind of managed to knock it away. As he's done so, he's ended up getting sort of sandwiched between two Everton defenders. It would have been a relatively weak one, in my view, but Wilf was absolutely adamant and fairly fed up when it didn't get given. Mike, what's your views on that?
Very, very close to it. It's quite close to the pitch anyway, and it was a no from me, and I think the majority of the people around as well. I felt like Wilf was already pretty worked up, and he didn't do himself any favours with the crowd from it. So yeah, I think it would have been very harsh, and as I usually say with these things, if it had happened against us, I'd have been pretty pissed off.
Yeah, I will say that it's one of those where the contact is actually sort of hip on hip and they very rarely get given. But, you know, it is contact. And I think watching it back, the commentator said something along the lines of, he's made contact, but he hasn't meant to. And that really winds me up because it doesn't matter whether you mean to make contact or not. If you do, it is a foul. But, you know, it might be something where something could have got given. It happened in the middle of the pitch, but you know, you're never really going to get a penalty from that, unfortunately.
It was just two players going for the ball with equal intent, so no way was it a penalty. I think, you know, Wilf was barging as much as the other bloke, so the ref gave it right call, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. But so we did start to improve towards the end of the first half, but, you know, it's all relative, isn't it? I think we were fairly abject for most of the first half. So, yeah, we just start to try and build a little bit of momentum. And once again, though, we have a situation where Roy can point to, oh, we weren't so great in the first half, but in the second half, we were better. And that annoys the hell out of me because, you know, matches aren't 90 minutes long. And, yeah, it's getting to me, I have to say.
I think what really pissed me off in his post-match comments was he said something like, well, both teams were rubbish in the first 20 minutes. And he's like, obviously, they were 1-0 up. And it's like, well, they can't have been that rubbish then if they went 1-0 up with an absolutely excellent strike, can they? I mean, you can't just go, oh, don't worry, we didn't create a lot. They didn't either. If you've got clinical players that put that one chance away, well, that's what we don't have. I mean, we'll talk about it with Benteke in a minute. He scored one, and we'll go on to it, I suppose. He scored it fairly luckily. He also missed two absolutely gilt-edged chances that Everton just did not miss. So when he says they weren't very good, it doesn't matter because they've got people that actually score a goal.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Although, well, we'll talk about the Benteke misses, I guess. But look, the noticeable difference was that we were pressing. And we, for whatever reason, we don't like to press teams in the first 45. And I think that doesn't do us any favours for sure. But we decided to sort of come out of that shape a little bit, play a little bit higher up the pitch. But I thought for the goal, what we saw was kind of when we start talking about maybe playing a bit differently, playing to the personnel, we actually saw evidence of how that could work. Because we've got a few bodies in and around Benteke and a long ball up. And, you know, he's going to win a fair amount in the air if you give him good service. And he's able to knock the ball on. Wilf has obviously picked it up and then, without really looking, it's an excellent through ball straight into Benteke's stride. So I really love to see it. Those two have always linked really well when they've played sort of close together, and I do like to see that. Yes, Pickford should obviously save that, but it isn't the point. You know, we put a good through ball for a striker to run onto, and the striker's just got his head down and put the shot on target. You know, occasionally when you hit the ball to go through the keeper's legs, it's probably the best place to put it because he doesn't quite know how to react if the shot's firm enough. And on this occasion, it was. And I was just delighted that Christian Benteke got a goal. I really, of all the players on the pitch that I wanted to score, he was right up there at the top.
Yeah, agreed. And he was excellent with his hold-up play throughout the game. He did all the things that you expect of the best of Christian Benteke when he's got his back to goal. So, yeah, absolutely no fault there. And if you're going to be kind to him about the shot, it certainly looked like Pickford had started to go far corner because that's where he expected a striker to go, and he went near corner. So, you know, it could have been a master stroke of deception, I suppose.
Well, let's call it that. He did have a really good chance shortly after. I don't know if this is one of the ones you're saying he should have scored, because I think that might be a little bit harsh because it was a terrible corner from PVA. And the ball's just kind of ended up hitting him at some point and then ended up hitting the sort of post quite high up. But could so easily have gone in. But there was the one later on where he just thought he's just going to head this straight in for 2-2 later on. And somehow Pickford's just tried to get something on it just by sort of jumping up in a general area, and it's hit him really. So, but it goes down as a really good save.
A really good save, but also, I mean, either side of him. And it was, I mean, the Palace fans were really up for it by then. And it really took the wind out of us as much as it took the wind out of the players to get stuck with the sucker punch not that long afterwards. But when that goal didn't go in, I mean, that's Pickford at his best, but because he seems to just have this reflex reaction save. You know, you see the best and the worst of Pickford most games, and it makes you worry for England sometimes, but excellent stop. But I mean, Benteke has an absolute beast of a head, you know, a proper meathead, and how he hasn't, with that amount of pace, managed to get it to go in, I've got no idea. And I watched it back on the highlights on the Palace website. and I'm no lip reader, but Hodgson, it's something like, how have you fucking missed that? I don't think he was too impressed.
I think what needs considering in that is the stat we talked about earlier on, where we're 18th in terms of crosses. You know, if a player is used to getting the ball put on his head, or given an opportunity to head the ball on a regular basis, and I'm acknowledging that Benteke hasn't been fit for a fair portion of the season, but when he has played, we just don't get enough service into him. I think Sam Allardyce was on BT Sport reading other people's comments and was saying similar, that how he got the best out of Benteke was to get the fullbacks and the wide players to pepper the crosses into the box as early as possible. Scored 17 goals like that in a season, didn't he?
Didn't he just?
Maybe there's something to learn there. Anyway, so we got that, the classic sucker punch that Mike's alluded to. Yes, a classic breakaway goal. Yes, a fantastic finish, but awful defending once again. So, you know, Richarlison's picked up the flick on after a long ball forward. Tompkins losing out to Dominic Calvert-Lewin. But just Cahill just backpedals. I mean, and he's standing way off him. He's given him 4 or 5 yards ahead of him and backpedaling. So no intention of getting close, and doesn't really seem sure of his direction. And part of that is because, you know, Richarlison's a very good footballer with good close control. So he's moving the ball about as he's running. But so easy for him to allow him to get close enough to shoot. You've got to do something about that. And to add salt to a literal injury, Tompkins pulls a hamstring running back as well. So wonderful, wonderful. Yeah, loved it.
I mean, obviously, Barcelona bid 85 million for Richarlison for a reason. He's an excellent player. But what I thought at the time was, when is the last time Zaha had the opportunity of that much space? Other teams just don't let it happen. He's obviously our player that creates the most, and Richarlison's the same for Everton. And I'm thinking the last time that Zaha had that kind of space, I think it was probably away at Huddersfield about a year and a half ago. It's just something that probably shouldn't happen in the Premier League, because they're obviously going to score. He's an amazing player, and it was frustrating. And at that point, you just knew that we weren't going to get anything from the game. It wasn't going to happen. It wasn't our day.
Yeah, I think if I mean, to be as fair as I possibly can be, because it's a breakaway, you know, when you do see Wilf get space on a few occasions, it is when we break and we move the ball quickly and the opposition have committed players forward. And we were very much putting huge amounts of pressure on Everton. And, you know, I think pretty all of us watching that would have thought, if there's a team that's going to score next, it'll be us, because they were absolutely rocking and our tails were up. But it just killed it. It absolutely killed it for us. I'm not saying we didn't try after that, but it really took the heart out of the performance, and it was horrible to watch in that sense. And Roy's tried to change a few things, and we'll talk about the subs afterwards, but let's just cover the final goal to make it 3-1 just before the end. So as I'd said, our forward momentum, I felt, had died by this point. And we were a little bit disjointed because of the changes that were made and the decisions that were made on those changes. But anyway, look, Everton got their first corner of the game on 88 minutes. Crossed it in. So the first thing that happens is Luca completely loses Richarlison, who he's marking, and he's able to run across the front of Cahill and get to the ball first. His header then comes off the bar. Dominic Calvert-Lewin there to tap in. Game over.
I imagine that Terence will be ribbing Eskiff on the next preview pod, because he predicted that would happen, that we'd lose 3-1, and DCL, as you've put him here, would get the third goal, and he was spot on. It's a miracle.
Yeah, I wish you could predict things that were of use. There you go. Well done, Eskiff, for the prediction. You can't give him stick this week, can you? So there you go. So there you go. That's 3-1. I've got to talk about the subs. So look, first of all, you know, we made three subs. Two of them I'm fine with, right? Tompkins for Dan, injury, totally understandable. McCarthy came off, which I thought was the right decision. And I'll talk about McCarthy in a sec, actually. But to bring on Max Mayer, try something a little bit different. He actually played Max centrally and hoped for him to get on the ball. Fortunately for Max, he's always coming onto matches where we're trying to chase something, trying to chase the game, get ourselves back level, all those kinds of things. And it's not, it'd be nice to see him come on when we're, you know, trying to increase our attacking potential and creativity to win a football match rather than to get back into one. But anyway, that's by the by. I don't know when I'm going to come back to McCarthy, but I will. But anyway, so the final substitution is the one that seems to have wound everybody up the most. And I can kind of see why. You've got Andros Townsend off the bench. You're 2-1 down. You're trying desperately to get in back into a match. So, what, you know, Benteke's on the pitch. You're thinking, let's try and get some more service into him. No. What you're going to do is you're going to bring on one of your central defensive midfielders who wasn't in for the right back and move a central defensive midfielder into right back and play the same system. I can't defend that. Can't defend that thought process. Coyote has something different to the other, to the Mackers anyway. A bit of height in there. Maybe he can get forward, get his head on something. He's, you know, quite direct at times, but you've got Andros Townsend on the bench. If you're going to chase a football match, he's right there. You're losing it. So if you concede through putting too many attacking players on, fine, you know, that's just what happens because you were losing the game and you tried to chase it. We can all deal with that. It's much harder to deal with bringing on a central defensive midfielder for a right back and then putting a midfielder at right back. Just baffling, absolutely baffling.
It was the thing that got to the people at the game, definitely. I think, you know, we realised that we were probably beaten by the better team until that point when, you know, there was some proper moaning and then people leaving early to go and get a pint before they left. Yeah, it's inexplicably Roy thing to do, wasn't it?
Absolutely right. But look, we're going to leave that there. It's been a hard thing to review. Hopefully you're still with us.
No paywall, no subscription. Back of the Nest. Fan-created podcasts, videos and articles. Free forever.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Couple of comments relating to the game were three. Rob Leonard said, to be honest, I think we're a sacco short of getting some points from the game. So I think that reflects the fact that, yes, it wasn't the worst game. And I think I said something similar earlier on when I was talking to Nick about the passing ability and things like that. Having someone like Sacco there who can pass the ball out probably would have helped. But I think there were more things wrong than just the defence.
Speaking of stuff that's wrong, Mikey's just put in the chat, that my lip reading is terrible in comparison to his. And what Hodgson actually said was, what a fucking save. Apologies for that.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So David Bowden also got in touch and said, was it just one of those games? We could have had three Richarlison goal sucker punch. And is the anger about the other results and situation rather than the game itself? Because I thought we looked decent and more positive than for a while. Nick, I'm going to ask you that. And we probably said that ourselves, I guess, throughout the course of our review. But, you know, is it a fair point that we actually could have got a bit more out of that game and our anger and frustration is really about other things?
I think we did look decent and positive, but only for a very short spell, you know, or very short spells. We need to maintain that in the game. And yeah, it's hard. The confidence was knocked out of us when the goal went in straight after we scored. So it's difficult, but it's about the manager geeing up the players and getting them ready for the game. It's got to be the one that that gets them fit for the game. And if you can't do that, you know, then something's going to change.
Absolutely right. And the imaginatively named, it's for fuck's sake, but it's not swearing because it's the fuck is with a PH. So it's, you can say fuck if it's with a PH. he wants an explanation of the playing out from the back, going through Guaita several times and then just lumping it forward for the Everton defence to start an attack. And I can't really explain that, mate, I'm afraid, other than the fact that I would suggest that rather than going through all the passing, let's just, if we're going to end up having to play direct, let's set up to play direct like we did for the start of the second half. Get people in and around Benteke, get the ball forward quick, get the ball in from wide quick. You know, that way we'll start to put pressure on teams. So I kind of agree with what you're saying there. I can't really explain why we don't do that with the personnel that we put out. So he's had some, got some questions though, and thoughts on dropping Luca, starting Gyro centrally. Sounds familiar, Nick. With MacArthur/Coyote, Mayer/IU in front, and then Wilf, Benteke and Andros. I think I'd say trying to fit Mayer or IU with Benteke, Andros and Wilf, I think can only be done if you are sacrificing something in the middle there. But I'm on board with it because it's pretty much what I picked. The idea of dropping Luca and starting Gyro, I'm personally not comfortable with it because I still rate Luca, but I'm starting to become in a minority, I think. Thoughts on that, Mike?
I mean, my only thought on it is I'm not so bothered about midfield. I think all of the players have got their strengths. I'm just not sure that IU and Benteke together is strong enough, and I would rather see Wilf, Andros and one other. That's the main thing that bothers me. I just don't think... I mean, IU scored 6 whilst playing down the middle, and since he's been on the right, he's been anonymous for large periods. I just don't think it suits him. If anything, he's a left-sided player. Yeah, that's the thing that really gets to me.
I think it's interesting. People often hark back to the time where we were playing what you might call relatively decent football. I think the zenith of that was when we beat Leicester 5-0, back when we had Loftus-Cheek. If you remember back then, it was a 4-4-2. You had Wilf playing up with Benteke. And the left-hand side, and the right-hand side was MacArthur, left-hand side was Loftus-Cheek. So you had central midfielders playing out. And wide is in inverted commas. You can't see it because it's a podcast. But they were the wide in the midfield. But we essentially played them very, very narrow in terms of wide players. They weren't wingers. They were all about driving infield. And we lamented the lack of width at times, but it actually enabled us to play some fairly good football. And I do wonder, you know, as much as I'm an advocate of the sort of forward three, if you like, I think under another manager we can do that. But under Roy, with his favourites, I think perhaps a return to that might work better as well. Nick?
There's always the possibility, of course, that Andros isn't actually 100% fit. I remember reading an interview with him about a serious injury he had before, and he said he had to change the way he played to get round the effect the injury had. So I don't know if there's anything going on with being injured so badly again this time and whether that's kind of playing on it or not. You know, we just don't think know. So. There could be a reason for him not playing.
I don't think so. I think the bottom line is he's you know, in full training. I'd say it's much more about the fact that, you know, Roy wants Benteke to be the figurehead because he wants him to do some work for the team in that position in terms of holding it up. And he also doesn't feel that dropping IU would be appropriate. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. But again, it's about, I still feel that's forcing people to play roles in the system because they're your favourites rather than picking the best players for the system. But there we go. We can move on from that now. That's way, way, way too much talking about the game. So let's get on to the Q&A. So we asked a few questions on Twitter earlier on. Mike put a tweet out. We got loads of replies. Not going to get to them all, but these are the things that people want us to talk about. Some of those were included in the match review that we've just done. But so... A simple question from Ebo. I'm going to ask this one to Nick. He wants to know, what the fuck is going on behind the scenes?
Oh, bloody knows at all. It's there's stadium, there's the Americans, how much input there is Steve Parrish bothered by this? Is he pulling his hair out? Is he still naive as a chairman? How much role does Dougie Freedman have? Has nobody told Roy that doing the same thing all the time is idiotic if you're not getting results? You know, how far down does the malaise go? And is squad togetherness still there?
Yeah, I think, you know, all of those things come under that question. And obviously it's not something we're going to be able to answer. I think we talked a lot in the transfer window shows about the potential disconnect between board and manager. Roy has very publicly come out and talked about, you know, positive talked about a contract. And I've got to say this, please, guys, come on. please don't make me have another year. Please, no, not another year. But, you know, obviously those backing Roy will say, you know, give him the right players, get on the same page and give him another year and he'll show you, what you know, some good football and some good results. But, for me, that ship has sailed. But that's obviously one thing that we can talk about that's going on behind the scenes. But what we don't know really, other than clearly something has changed with regards to the direction of the ownership, with regards to the financial input, there's something not quite right there. You know, there's no doubt that the stadium has stalled. There's no doubt that investment in the team is just not there at the moment. You know, our wage bill is incredibly high, which I'm sure doesn't help. But, you know, there doesn't really seem to be that same drive from the top to progress. You know, Steve Parish has gone on record about talking about how important it is not to stand still, because in this division you go backwards. But that's exactly what we've done for several transfer windows now. So there's something up. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, it's not the worst situation we've ever been in as Palace fans. And we could probably do well to remember that at times as well. So let's move on from that. Waggers 66 wants to talk about the weather. It's windy, isn't it? Pretty windy at the moment.
It was really nice in Liverpool yesterday, actually. Other than if you were just wearing a T-shirt when it was probably a bit nippy.
Yeah, well, that's the dangers of vomiting all over yourself, eh? But,
it's actually still there, isn't it? Today.
Yeah, we said that earlier. He's still there, yeah. It's fun. It's a nice town. But, yeah, you mentioned pre-show, Nick, that you went out and got immediately soaked. Or was it that in the intro? It's hard to remember. It seems so long ago.
Yeah, it was a pre-show. I've never got wet so instantly. It came at me sideways. It was like being thrown, having a bucket of water thrown at me, like, and Tiz was. It was literally drenched. Poor old dog. He loves his walks. When he's come home straight away. So, never known rain like it. And wind.
Tiz was. That really is. That's one for the kids there.
Yeah, but the really annoying thing is, I wanted to hear the wind and stuff because I knew it'd be storming. But all the way, all I could have going through my head was when you walk through a storm. And I just had that going on for 15 minutes with the rain lashing down on me, and it really did me head in. I had to come home and put some different music on.
There you go.
I couldn't hold my head up high because it's so windy.
Some evidence of Nick's problems and his dog barking in the background as well. And so there you go. That's a cracking one. Stephen Barton's got in touch. In cricket, we have specialised coaches for batting, fielding and bowling. Would it be feasible to bring in an attacking coach to work with forward players to bring some fresh impetus and different ideas? Roy gets praised for his defensive setup, but that's only half the game. Well, obviously, there are specialist coaches in football as well. We don't really have a particularly big coaching staff in terms of first team coaches anyway. I dare say some of the academy and reserve coaches may get involved in some of the training as well. But it's an interesting point. You know, I take the question myself. You know, from my perspective, that's one of the things that might encourage me, were Roy to stick around, if he was to bring in people for some new ideas. You know, I don't have any specific problem with Ray Lewington, and you know, I sort of encourage the idea of promoting people like Dave Reddington as well. But, you know, it's been widely observed, whether it's true or not, that since we lost Stephen Reid, there seemed to have been a lack of creative thinking from the coaching setup. I don't know if that's true. It just appears that way. It might just be coincidence, but bringing in someone else to the coaching staff probably would be something that would appeal to me. So not a bad shout that. Mark Drew wants our thoughts on relegation. I don't know if that's in the event if we were relegated, or how close we think relegation is. But what do you reckon?
I mean, it did worry me. I think I was in the WhatsApp chat yesterday. Terence told me to shut up, but I was coming back from the game thinking, oh, I don't really see where we're getting any points from. Obviously, we're still six above the drop zone, but more worryingly, we're only three above Brighton, who picked up another draw, and I've got a nasty sinking feeling about a couple of Saturdays' time. I mean, I think we're going to need more points, or teams staying up, we're going to need more points than usual, just because this is a very odd season. I think it will be a proper 40-point season, in which case we need 10 more points from 12 games. Fairly simple maths. If we were to go down, Mr. Drew, at least you're going to get 8 more games next season, aren't you?
Well, potentially. I mean, what I'll say is the idea of relegation doesn't scare me, but the financial impact of the club really does. I do worry what that would be like. I mean, you'd certainly lose, you know, although we do need to do a hell of a lot of squad surgery as well, so maybe that would help, but it wouldn't be good. Let's put it that way. Rob got in touch and said, what's the criteria to support a different club? He did that with smiley faces, though, so don't have a go at him, Nick, but you're not allowed ever. Are you?
No, ever. It's a curse. It's a blessing and a curse, and you just have to go with it.
And we talked about downs. We talked about this long ago when we were called Homesdale Radio. But we used to talk about feeling sorry for fans of certain clubs because they didn't get to feel the full range of emotions that you get being a Palace fan. And this comes under that, doesn't it, Nick? It's, you know, it's the full picture of what it is to be a football supporter.
And what was also mentioned back in those halcyon days was that we hope we don't get like Stoke and everybody moaning all the time till eventually they go down through sheer apathy. So let's hope not.
Yeah, tough when the apathy seems to come from some more important areas. But there you go. So we've sort of tackled this. Si got in touch, one of a number of questions. I picked three of his, I think, six. So good to get those questions in, mate. Cheers. So he's asked about the new stadium and the academy. I think the academy funding and process is underway. The site's been sorted and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's just going to take a bit of time. Stadium, you know, the signs are very, very, well, it's just very quiet, isn't it? So I think when you've got an ownership issue at the club, like we seem to have in terms of the people at the top who still want to be there, very hard to invest any significant money in something. So bit of a concern. But he talks about the ageing squad and asks, what's the plan for the next 3 to 5 years? And I think that this is difficult to answer because the plan at the moment has just now got to be down to how do we play out the rest of the season, try and stay in this division? And that's a sad thing. The plan for the next 3 to 5 years, you know, the brief from owners, chairman to director of football to manager will be dealing with that ageing squad. We've twice in a row, understandably, because once you do it once and don't change the team, it will keep happening. We've put our oldest ever Premier League squad out. And we, in fact, have the second oldest Premier League squad in Europe, I think it is. So not good. And there's so much work needs to be done on that.
We really need to get stuff done with the academy as well, because bless them, the under 23 team aren't doing that well by all accounts, are they? So it's not like, you know, if we go down, we had the players coming through when we came up, didn't we? We had our, I won't pluralise your Zaha's and your Kleins, but do you know what I mean? We haven't got those players coming through to help us bounce back.
Yeah, I'm not big into the idea of where the academy is finishing and how they're playing is that big of a deal. Personally, in terms of results, but I mean, you've got to remember we've sent a lot of players, either released players or sent them out on loan or, you know, or sold slash given them away. So they're actually down to quite a low number in terms of the academy squad. So that's why you see lots of trialists at the moment. They're trying to bring those numbers up with a bit of quality from other academies at the minute, but definitely some work to do there, agree, Nick. Moving on, Keith Bell wants us to talk about Hodgson's future. Palace Ash on the same topic, saying lots of people calling for Roy to go. Not him yet. Who is there to replace him? And Bucks Eagle countering with Roy is doing well with what he's got. We could obviously go on for a very long time, but I feel we'll be returning to this topic shortly. So let's get a view each, shall we, gents, on that. So first of all, I'll just summarise by saying I can't really be doing, and I respect other people's point of view. I respect your view, Bucks Eagle. I can't currently cope with people telling me Roy is doing well with what he's got. You know, he's now got the best, you know, the best part of his squad back. It's a decent squad. It's capable of more than he's delivering, and he's holding us back, in my view. I've had enough. And, you know, Keith wants us to talk about it, but Palace are specifically talking about who is there to replace him. I think I talked in my solo podcast last week to cover the fact we had some illness. I don't like being asked that question. I think it's not for me to answer, really. But, I mean, we can try. But realistically, saying you have to keep the manager you've got because you haven't come up with a plan to replace him, the plan has to come from the club. They're the ones that do the succession planning. When you want to replace someone, you do interviews, you work, try and listen to what they want to do for your club, how much effort they've put into research in your squad, where they think the way to go. Those are the things that need to be considered when replacing a manager, not who's out of work or not who's doing well at another club. But there you go. So that's what I've got to say on it. So I'm not going to pick out a name, but Mike, I'll start with you. Are you currently in the Roy out camp, and you got any ideas who you'd bring in?
No, I'm not in the Roy out camp. I think I can't see a situation where Parrish is going to pull the trigger on him either. He might not offer him an extension, but it sounds as though he has. So hard to say, but I think he's probably earned himself, especially at his age as well, the option to go when he wants within reason. Yes, I mean, it's frustrating at times, but there's also times where he pulls it back together, and he tends to, after a bad period, suddenly we go on an amazing run. So we'll have to see if that happens. In terms of who'd replace him, money-wise, I can't see it being somebody that's in contract because it costs a lot of money. The same reason I don't think he'd get rid of him, because he doesn't want to pay the millions that would involve getting rid of a manager. I mean, Chris Hughton's currently out of a job, but the people that are out of a job might not be by the time that Hodgson leaves. I would personally absolutely love to see Emma Hayes, the Chelsea women manager, and really become a famous club for having the first female manager, because she seems absolutely amazing. But that's probably out of left field and not based on anything whatsoever. It's just conjecture, isn't it? I mean, I don't think any of us could come up with anything that would be remotely like what will actually happen. We'll end up with, I don't know, Pardew back from Den Haag or something.
please no. Patrick's head will explode. Nick, just quickly, I mean, you've basically suggested that this week you've sort of drifted into the Roy out camp. Just to confirm that that's the case, and have you got any ideas who you'd like to see in next?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the Newcastle game, if we don't get anything out of that, I'll try and at least play a bit differently, or, you know, at least like look like we want to win a game and play with a bit more verve. Then, yeah, I think it is time, because it's just the malaise has been going on for too long, and we kept on to Pardew for way too long, by about 6 or 7 months. I don't want that happening with Roy, because it just sucks the life out of you as a supporter. Yeah, we want it to be a pleasant experience going to Palace again. And if he can't shift the way we're playing, then something's got to be done.
Absolutely right. We had loads more questions, and maybe we'll keep some over for another show, but I don't want us to go on too much longer. I think we'll end with covering... there's one about Wilf, but I think I will keep that going. So thanks for that, Bucks Eagle. I think some interesting points to discuss around your views on Wilfried Zaha there, and the sort of general... attitude a few weeks ago. We're talking about Europe and all that kind of stuff. I think we'll come back to that another time. At least I hope we will. But I think, can we end with Martin's comment where he's saying, are we sleepwalking into relegation, persisting with negative tactics? It's costing us, suggesting obviously the difficulty of trying to play for a 0-0 every week. And it's really the term sleepwalking that I want to talk about. I mean, do we feel perhaps that anyone that the club must be aware, right? They, you know, they can see the league table, you know, the chairman can see what's happening, he watches the games, and sometimes the camera cuts to him with certain expressions on his face that suggests he's feeling the things we're all feeling. So I don't know if necessarily we're sleepwalking into it, but I do think it's a fair comment from the perspective that everyone talked, you know, quite a long time ago now about how we got the points on the board and how we're not going to go down this year. We all talked about it, and I do feel like the club, by the club I probably mean the players and the management, have kind of played like that, if it makes sense. We've kind of gone into every game with that malaise that we've talked about, with the consistency of tactics, and just thinking, you know, in the grand scheme of things, statistically, we'll pick up enough points now because we've got so many on the board. But, you know, you think it's weeks now since we were saying we've got 30 points on the board, you know, and we've still got 30 points on the board. It's, yeah, it's a really worrying time for me. I have to say, I'm in a position where I am very much looking at the bottom of the table and worrying.
I still maintain it's because people started talking about getting into Europe on Twitter. Every time that happens, we just slide and slide. Don't mention it, kids, at all. We'll be fine.
Just going to say, you mentioned Europe in a podcast because I listened to it back to it the other day, and I'm blaming you entirely. Mike, have we got time for your quiz? Should we do your quiz?
Absolutely. I mean, it's going to take less long than the last quiz, and it's also going to make more sense.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, hang on. Let's give it some context. Before Mike delivered us an entirely inaccurate and completely convoluted quiz, so I'm hoping that this is an accurate and less convoluted quiz. So let's go.
It's both of those things. And the subject of the quiz of the week is Christian Benteke. I felt he's probably due. It was great to hear people shout, "How shit must you be?" Benteke scored at the game. So I thought, yes, let's ask some questions. So I've got three questions. So three rounds. I'm going to start you both with a fairly simple question about Christian Benteke. So who wants to go first?
Well, I'll let Nick go first.
Go on in.
Okay,
I'm not very good at these.
Okay, well, you've got a fairly simple one. So, including this season and the two previous seasons, so that's 17-18, 18-19 and this season, how many league goals has Benteke scored?
Five.
Yes, yes, easy. Good stuff. So you see, start off with an easy one. And a fairly simple one for you as well, Hambo, although you did choose to go second and it is slightly less easy. Can you remember who his one league goal was against last season?
Leicester?
No.
That's upsetting.
It was in our 3-2 win over Arsenal when
you're quite right. That's the season before was a header against Leicester.
It's 1-0, Nick. What I didn't decide is what you win. So you'll have to sort this out between yourselves. This one's a bit more difficult, and I'm going to ask the single question, and you can both have a guess, and whoever's closer, you'll get the points. So, he scored a penalty, and that was actually against Leicester in the 5-0 win, back at the end of the 17-18 season. But before that, how long ago was the last time he scored a goal with his feet? So this is a goal from open play. So you can give it to me in days, in weeks, or in months. So you have a go first, Nick, and then Hambo.
27 weeks.
Okay, so 27 weeks since the last time he scored a goal with his feet, other than that penalty. And Hambo?
28 weeks.
So he's... Good to go second. You can be a bastard about it, can't you? I think you can both go quite a bit higher. I'll let you in. 33 months, 16 days ago. Two years, 9 months and 16 days between that goal and the one he scored against Everton. And it was a goal against Liverpool. He scored with left foot in that 2-1 win back in the 34th game of the 2016-17 season. So fair to say he's not too prolific with his feet. So that's 1-1. So this is the deciding one. Question three. Which two sides has he scored the most against? So that's three goals he scored against two sides. And being as you got the last one right, Hambo, if you go first.
Right, I'm going to say, this is difficult, man. I'm going to say Liverpool and It's not, but I can only think of Chelsea.
It's neither of those sides. So he's scored three goals against two sides, Nick. Do you want to have a go?
I'm going to say Everton. And has he scored three goals against us for other teams? Does that count?
Oh, this is for Palace.
Oh, for Palace, okay. Everton and Arsenal.
No, again, neither of those two sides. Hambo, do you want another go?
I was going to say, is Leicester one of them?
Yes, Leicester's one, yep.
West Ham?
No, I will give you a clue on the other one. He scored a brace against them back in the season when he scored the... his decent season. I'll give you a bit more of a hint. It was the game after the Swansea 5-4 game. So he scored a brace against this other team that he scored three against, and it was the game straight after the 5-4.
I'm even struggling to name teams at the moment.
Are they still in the Premier League, this team?
Certainly are. And they gave us a good old-fashioned whipping not that long ago. Put you out of your misery and it can be a one-all draw. Southampton and Leicester are the two sides he scored three goals against. Nick. That is some Benteke fun for you there.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed myself there.
Good.
All right, thank you very much, Mike. Another quiz back next week. Right, we'll leave you there. Don't forget to check out the Pitch app, Google Pitch Sport Football, and you'll find a way to download the app there, interact with us on it, and contribute to yourselves. And send us your team lineups and what else? And tell us how you're doing your predictions. If you add us as friends on there, send us your codes and we'll add you. You can compete in a little league table, which I'm currently top of. The massive four people that are in it. So do join us for that. Of course, listen to the Love Sport Show Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. The podcast will be out shortly after that. And of course, the Preview Boys will be back with more fun ahead of the Newcastle game. Thank you very much indeed. See you later.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.